How excited are you for that Disney Afternoon Collection?
Oh, so excited.
That's going to be great. I wish it was on Switch.
I know. That'd be the best.
It's so weird how, like, we didn't even know there was a Chip and Dale 2 or DuckTales 2 for the NES.
For the longest time, yeah.
They came out real late. I mean, gosh.
I think Chip was, which one came out, like, 94 or one?
Yeah. Like, those shows weren't even on the air anymore.
Right?
Yeah.
How weird.
They were syndicated constantly. I mean,
when you look at them, they kind of look like remixed sort of things. Like,
well, sure. But hey, I'll take it.
I'll take it. All day, every day. What was that slogan? Everybody's dizzy, getting a little busy. Disney Afternoon.
Yeah, that's how it went. Disney, it had a great theme. Everything had a great theme song in the Disney Afternoon. Except Gargoyles, that was just kind of moody. I wasn't much of a Gargoyles fan.
I feel like I'd appreciate that now.
Yeah, everybody. There are people who like love Gargoyles.
Do we need to go back to Gargoyles?
Yeah, I think that ship may have sailed. Exploding Barrel Podcast for March 17th, 2017.
This Happy St. Patrick's Day,
oh,
Michael.
Is it? Oh, should we wear green? You're wearing green.
Ha.
I'm a scrub. Ow.
I have to pinch you.
Is that a thing?
Yes.
Why'd you hurt me?
That's what the rules are. I just follow them.
It's a bad rule. All right. Welcome to the show, everybody. This is Mike Minai, joined by my brother, the mean AJ.
Hello.
Hurts me. So we saw the new Beauty and the Beast. We're going to be talking mostly about that. Probably kind of spoilery, I guess. I mean, as spoilery as it gets.
Yeah, you know what happened. I assume you've seen the animated film sometime in the last...
But still, there are differences and things.
So yeah, he got this.
This is mostly a Beauty and the Beast spoiler cast, I guess. And then some other things that Special Zone has
about. We might talk about Zelda some more.
Maybe. Spoiler cast. All right. So yeah, we saw Beauty and the Beast. So this movie's... It's interesting because we've had these live-action, like, animated film remakes before, but they've always been kind of, like, in one way or another, substantially different.
Yeah, like Jungle Book is
yeah,
a good example
like,
of that.
Like, a much bigger scope and, like, a kind of a very different tone, right? Like, Maleficent, they, like, are following the villain. I remember when they did 101 Dalmatians, it was more modern, and the dogs didn't talk anymore. It's weird because this was very much, like, this is Beauty and the Beast. It's like the same characters, it's the same songs, a lot of the same lines, same story beats, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like, just like, oh, this is it in live action now. And it was, yeah, it was. I kind of went in with lower expectations.
I think I did too.
Because I was way
that might have helped, but I actually really enjoyed the movie.
Yeah, I did too. It was fun. I mean, there is kind of like this, is it necessary thing?
Right.
And like, maybe, I don't
know.
But
the way I look at it too, like, let's not forget, unlike a lot of those other remakes, this also had its Broadway adaptation. So like... We've seen live-action Beauty and the Beast before.
Right. Well, and the weird thing is, because there's still new songs in this, mm-hmm. and like, but they weren't going to like use the Broadway songs, which I kind of was hoping sometimes.
Yeah.
Because like, you know, they want to have the new songs. In, which is weird, because it's like the same person. It's still like Al Macon writing more new music for the same thing again.
I think Tim Rice did the lyrics.
Right, yeah.
For the new songs.
Right.
But then it was cool. Do you see this? The new verses in Gaston were actually written by Howard Ashman. They were cut from the original release, they recorded it, but like it was deemed too risque.
What were the lines in it? Like,
I can't remember them exactly, but there were a couple different verses in there.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, and it was interesting just to kind of see it all live actiony, and it was kind of like strange to get used to it for a bit because it is sort of like a Broadway-y thing sometimes of like the blocking of people moving and the dancing and the, you know, and the what have you. It's like, you know, we don't have a whole lot of movies like this anymore. It's not exactly like La La Land, you know,
right.
The musical and all that. So what, I guess first we kind of got to go with like how we thought of the actors and all that stuff.
Sorry, I didn't silence my watch. I thought Luke Evans was the breakaway star of this
Yeah,
film,
I think he was
mind.
Like the best, like, yeah, I think he brought the most to like a role, kind of made it his own, but like still cool in a way. His Gaston was really neat.
Yeah, because his Gaston, part of this, the writing, it's different from the animated Gaston in a lot of ways. He actually, in the beginning of the film, I thought was like, there's nothing wrong with this guy.
Yeah, he actually seemed a lot
more... I mean, he's a little braggadocious,
but... He
actually
starts more sympathetic and ends up more sinister, which
was
kind
of
interesting.
So. And it wasn't a jarring transition either.
No.
They handled well. And I liked that he had this whole backstory. He was a captain in the war, and he kind of misses that carnage of battle in a weird way, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of like adding backstory for people, which I think works out well. It's like it's nice to get a little bit more what's going on with Belle and her family and the Beast, and it gives them this like one of the things with the animated movie, I guess, is a problem. It's like, well, why exactly do Belle and the Beast, you know, come together because he's nice all of a sudden. Well, you know, you can be nice to a girl. It doesn't mean they...
Right.
But here they have, and you know, they have the similar mother situation. But the change I really liked was that instead of the Beast, like being a Neanderthal that doesn't know how to read, like, yeah, Belle has to teach how to read. Like, he likes books.
Yeah.
Too. Like, they have that in common.
Yeah, they have a commonality.
Yeah, so that, like, I think that, as far as just, like, a change, that was maybe my favorite thing.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the other things that I kind of liked that was added, and I just lost my train of thought. You jump in.
Well, I was going to say, they tweak a lot of the weird plot holes you had in the first movie.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Okay, good. Well, like, for example, if you do the math in the first movie, he was turned into a beast when he was 11. Because they talk about 21st birthday and 10 years. But, like, there's the portrait on the wall that the Beast slashes that is not an 11-year-old. And it's like, what's a harsh judgment to pass on a kid, right?
Yeah.
And then also, like, little things like, you know, Chip has all these brothers and sisters when they're, you know, cops, but, like, where'd all those kids go?
Why doesn't she like them as much?
Right, like weird stuff like that.
There's a lot of pothole fixing, especially, like, the, how does nobody notice this castle ever?
Yeah, and they explain, like, the villagers' memories are erased of it, and, like, so that was good. You know, they show the night he's transformed, like played out. It's not like a window.
Yeah,
he's older, and
they do a bit to kind of explain why, like, the servants have a little bit of culpability.
Yeah, because they didn't do anything to raise him better.
Right. So, like, there's, like, yeah, like, some of all these things are kind of, like, nice touches. Mm-hmm. So, kind of going back to the actors, like, what do you think of Emma Watson?
I really enjoyed her.
I like her performance a lot. Her singing is whatever.
It wasn't awful. It wasn't great. It was just kind of there.
It wasn't very stirring.
Right.
I wasn't getting the feels during the, like, reprises of Belle like you do in the animated movie.
Part of the problem, everyone talks about, it's not, like you said, it's not auto-tuned. It just sounds really produced.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it sounded like, you could tell she was singing in a studio and they dubbed it in. Like, there was nothing that felt like it was filmed on the day. Which is the case with most movie musicals. It just mixes better, usually.
Right.
This didn't mix.
No, it didn't mix. And there was, like, some post-help. Like, you know, call it auto-tune what you will. There was some pitch correction.
Sure.
And what have you. And you can kind of...
You know who... It's not that it was bad, but who I expected more from...
Was it LeFou?
Yeah, Gad. It was fine. Very predictable.
Yeah.
He didn't really put too much of a spin on the character, except for all the gay stuff.
Which was not much.
I actually really enjoyed
it. There was not much of that. After all the big deal people made, at the end, I was like nothing gay's happened yet. That came over, I was like, oh, thank God.
You're right.
I was like, you're
going to be disappointed if you didn't, like, kiss a guy.
I was kind of being, I don't know, I was, like, joking, like, all day with people, whatever. I was seeing this movie. I'm like, I'm going to go watch LeFou suck Gaston's penis in that new Beauty and the Beast movie. Except maybe more. It's because it's ridiculous. That's all anybody was talking about. It's like, it's nothing.
Yeah, but, like, in a weird way, like during the song Gaston, he wasn't cartoony enough, if that makes sense.
Yeah, in a way.
You know?
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, like, there's no, like, rendition of a song here that is better than it is in the original.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Like, in a lot of them, like, they're adding in extra dance breaks, which kind of break
the flow. I almost wish they went further with that in Gaston. There was that little bit of a dance break where they're both on the table.
Yeah, that was
cool. I was like, let's do some more of that, because, like, this is actually something you can do now.
Yeah.
I thought Be Our Guest was great.
Be Our Guest was great.
That was... It's not like it's better or worse than the original, but it's a good alternative.
Yeah. I'm not
a side grade.
Like, I wasn't super into Ewan McGregor's French accent thing.
I like Ewan McGregor.
He's not as good as... He doesn't hold a candle to the original.
Oh!
I was waiting for that one. Waiting to drop that one. Oh, God. But I think my favorite thing in the movie was Ian McKellen's Cogsworth slowly getting into Be Our Guest.
Yeah.
And he was great.
Let's talk about the magical characters, because from all the early release stuff, it was like, these don't look
that was kind of one of the things that I wasn't all that sold on.
But in the context of the movie, I thought everything worked really well, actually.
Yeah, and I think actually one of the best things the movie does, and you were talking about how you thought the last third of the movie, like, really picked up.
Yeah, I thought once you got to the part where Belle and Beast started getting along, for some reason from then on, I don't know what it was, but, like, I started enjoying the movie more.
I think I have a theory. I think they do a very good job of upping the stakes by adding in the notion that when the last petal falls, not just that they're stuck how they are, mm-hmm. those inanimate objects, like,
they become
the object. They basically die.
Which is... From the Broadway version.
Is it? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, they make that Yeah, they do that thing, and it adds a lot. You know, you have a lot more emotional sympathy with those characters, mm-hmm. right? You like those guys, so it adds a lot more. There's like that really long, sad scene where it looks like, oh, they're basically all dying and saying goodbye to each other.
Yeah, like when Chip comes like looking for his mom, he's already transformed. Yeah. Cogsworth's like, oh no, and I'm like, oh no, he's right.
Yeah. And that was really good, though. It was nice.
Yeah, yeah, they that all pulled off very well. Mm-hmm. I liked there was the one new character, if you want to say, which was Stanley Tucci as a harpsichord, and I like Stanley Tucci, so I was totally on board with
What's
that.
A harpsichord,
the piano thing.
Don't say piano.
It's a harpsichord. Like,
okay, fine.
You don't know what a harpsichord is?
No.
You no, need a fight?
I don't know. I don't know what a harpsichord is. I'm sorry.
I will forgive you this one time.
Yeah.
Yeah. But like, you're right, they do amp it up. Like, he didn't shoot him with an arrow. He shot him with a gun.
Yeah, three times. I shot you three times, beast. yeah, that was like,
that's funny. That's funny.
Then,
of course, it didn't help just in our own personal experience. We had one of those commentator type guys sitting behind us. The whole movie.
It's just like, ooh,
Gaston falls to his doom, and here's this guy. Oh, he's not getting up from that.
Like, yeah, you're wacky.
Shut the fuck up, dude. Apparently his daughter was sitting next to Jessica, and I was like bitching about him after the movie. Jessica's like, that's his daughter right next to me. Shut up. Wasn't. I'm like, you know what? Don't care.
I think Jessica thought that. It wasn't.
Even if it was, don't care. He needs to learn.
Don't worry. That wasn't his daughter. So, but
if he wanted to have words with me, I would have been glad to exchange them.
Right. But there were things that they added that I wasn't necessarily a huge fan of.
Like the Enchantress is kind of a character.
Yeah, it seemed unnecessary.
Right.
I think she kind of just showed up more for no reason. She kind of just show up in the scene.
Like, the only thing she does that's actually impactful is she saves Maurice.
Which is, like, borderline Deus Ex Machina. It's like, how did Maurice get out of this one? Oh, she shows up.
Yeah, I mean, someone else could have done, like, hell, what might have been more interesting was if LeFou was the one who, like, goes back and sets him free because he feels bad.
Maybe, yeah. Especially if they're doing that whole redemption arc thing with him anyway.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. Like, that could have, I think, worked pretty well, actually, when I say that out loud.
Yeah, so, you know, something along those lines.
I really like Kevin Klein as Maurice.
No, he was great.
It's a very different take on the character. He's not as whimsical.
Well,
but I like
he's not, well, it's not quite as kooky, so it's like, it almost kind of makes the whole they're driving him to the madhouse thing worse. Yeah, I like the stuff they do. I really like the moment where, like, he's, like, in the tavern before Gaston.
Yeah, he's, you know, like, all cleaned up, and he's just, like, sitting there waiting.
Mm-hmm. I think it was smart how, like, he's an artist, and they kind of made Belle more of, like, the inventor type. To do a little bit more to explain why she might be an outcast, because she almost doesn't seem very outcasty in the anime.
Dick was at school, and like, oh, you're washing your clothes in a smart way. Well, fuck you!
We hate you. Well, they were more upset that they were just teaching a girl to read. God. Oh, man.
You know, I like that they did it. There was a lot of colorblind casting going on in the movie, and I like that they did that.
Sure, that's fine.
For some reason, it just makes me think of Hamilton.
Well, you know.
In a weird way.
Yeah, we're getting into all that. Do you think they'll ever make a Hamilton movie, or is that just not too much?
Someday.
It might be
bad. Just like the producers. Once, like, the whole stage version.
I feel like that had a negative effect on everything the producers said.
Well, it was a terrible job done in that movie. You know, do it good would be my advice.
They, and kind of going back to the songs, like, this rendition of Beauty and the Beast, it was fine, but she kept doing this thing where she was, like, coming in intentionally late on every line.
Once or twice is fine, but she was doing it the whole
song. Right, it was, like, driving me a little crazy, like, hey, just sing the bit. But who was the guy from the Beast, was he in much else? I think he was in Downton Abbey.
Yeah, he's not, like, super
But he
huge.
Was really good.
Yeah, I enjoyed his performance a lot. I also, again, thought, like, similar to the inanimate objects, CG Beast worked a lot better in the film.
Yeah, no, I was kind of worried about, like, how much CG would have to be in this movie. I understood why it had to be CG, mm-hmm. but I'm still, like, leery of that, and it was all fine.
They apparently tried to do just makeup.
Yeah.
And they're like, eh.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you try. No, but CG, the Beast looked really good, the mm-hmm. objects looked good, Cogsworth, like, especially was great. I love Cogsworth, I mean, seeing McKellen is great.
Again, just fleshing out weird plot holes, I like that a lot of these characters, like, had relationships in the town, but they forgot about them because of the curse. So, you know, Mrs. Potts, there's Mr. Potts.
Right.
He's like, oh, my family, I remember now.
Right.
And McKellen's like,
Cogsworth is
there's
his
that weird, always seemingly out of place woman. And she was kind of bothering me for the whole film. I'm like, she just contrasted too much with everything. I'm like, why is she here? And then it, like, it, they actually paid it off. And I was like, that's good. Because I was like, his wife, and he's sitting there, turn back.
That was pretty good.
Yes.
Right. So, yeah, I thought it was... Is it a movie that I think I ever need to see again? I don't know if I'll ever go out of my way for it, necessarily. But I think I was pleased. And it's going to make a zillion dollars.
Oh, my God. That theater was completely sold out. Yeah. I haven't been in a completely sold out theater. Right. Granted, for whatever reason, they put it in one of the smaller theaters, which seemed like a mistake in our local cinema's part. But
These live-action adaptations are always interesting, because they always do well, but they're so much more a product of their time than the animated films, right?
Well, sure. I mean, part of that is technology. You know, 10 years from now, we would be able to do this better,
right?
But like Beauty and the Beast, the animated film, is timeless. It looks good now. It looked good then. Like
it's kind of like the weird, even with just like the animated films. Like, you know, you can buy Snow White and Seven Dwarfs for your kids now. And it's like a little older, but it's not like making them watch some other movie from the
30s.
You know, right? It's interesting. So like it's kind of like, I know, because people sometimes talk like, what are they going to do in the future? Is it going to be like the live action version and the animated version in the parks and stuff? It's going to be the animated version.
Right, it'll always be the original.
It's not like even when, you know, like, because when we were kids, there was that 101 Dalmatians remake again, and it was a big hit, and they even made a sequel to it, but, you know, it kind of had its time and place.
Right.
I think there's a similar thing with this. I think, you know, it's going to make a ton of money, it's going to sell a ton of Blu-rays and what have you, and then, like, not like fade from memory, but like, you know, it's going to kind of take its place in history.
The way I look at a lot of these is like... almost like think of them as visual companions to the original film.
Right, yeah. Like, people would say that about the Harry Potter movies sometimes when they didn't really like them as much as the books.
Yeah, that's what you say. It's like, well, you know, it's just a...
It's interesting to have this different look. Yeah. And again, it's a little weirder just because it is so much more of a literal translation, right? Like, this is, hey, here's Beauty and the Beast, like, as live action movies. Like usually they're taking away songs. This was just... basically everything that was there and then adding stuff.
Yeah, it's 45 minutes longer, I think. Than the original.
Yeah, film. I can't think of anything that was like necessarily omitted.
Yeah, no, like they added stuff in the original story that wasn't like the book, which you referenced before, and you know, little things like that, which I like.
Yeah, the book, which I was like a little bit like, oh, this seems convenient. Then I'm like, oh, whatever. They're not used. They didn't use it to like solve a plot problem. They did it just for background stuff, so that's fine.
That was a good scene. I like that scene.
Yeah, it was a nice little song about being in Paris. Like, the one big new song added was the Beast song, which, it was good, but I almost kind of was biased against it, because the whole time, the one song I really wanted them to add from the Broadway version was, the Beast has this song, he actually sings it at the end of Act 1 after he drives Belle away, if I can't love her, or whatever, and it's just this really good, like, at end of Act 1 song. It's like the Beast at his low point, kind of thing.
Yeah, well, and it uses that melody that's like that kind of fanfare plays in the score.
Yeah, exactly. And I really like that song. So it was a bit when, like, and it was at the wrong moment, because it was when he lets Belle loose anyways, and he starts singing, like, oh, is he going to sing that? No, it's a new song. And it was actually pretty good. It was the same kind of beat as in the play where he's kind of going up the ramparts and up the tower and stuff like that and what have you. So, you know, it worked. And that was, you know, as far as, like, the new song and musical moments added, that was probably the best thing. But, it was a fun movie. Like I said, I kind of went in with different, you know, lowest expectations, because I was sure. Because I actually liked Jungle Book a lot.
Jungle Book was a huge surprise.
And this isn't like that where I thought Jungle Book was, like, great. Right? I thought Jungle Book was, like...
Jungle Book. Yeah. You know, it came out.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if this is great. It's good. It's very good. It's fun to watch.
Yeah, if you're a fan, go see it.
Yeah, go see it. If you have kids, go see it.
You probably already know if you're going to like this or not, frankly.
Right, yeah.
If you're on the fence, I'd say go.
Sure.
You'll end up enjoying it.
Yeah, I think so. Like, go with reasonable expectations and whatnot. And don't think, like, this is ever going to replace the original or anything like that. So, and it's interesting how just many more, like... we know they're remaking Aladdin and Lion King already, which makes sense. John Favreau's going to do Lion King. He's probably going to get a very similar treatment to Jungle Book. And then Aladdin, I imagine, will probably get a very similar treatment to like this, where it's a pretty literal translation for the most part, but with stuff added here and there.
You see, they're actually the casting calls for that, or they're looking for actual Middle Eastern actors, which is cool.
I think Lil Murray's off the table, because it's just a bit much to do all that underwater stuff with live action. Right?
Yeah, it'd be so much CG anyway.
I wonder if, like, once they do those, though, and those, you know, the Magic Four or what have you from the 90s, do they do the lesser ones from the 90s? Popularity-wise, I mean, or do they go back later?
I'd be cool with, like, a big live-action Hunchback.
Yeah, but, like,
That could be cool.
I wonder if they do that, they'll do more older ones. Like, I actually never saw the live-action Cinderella.
Me neither. People said they liked it. Jessica's seen it. She likes it quite a bit, actually.
And it wasn't a musical, though, right?
I don't think so.
Right.
Apparently, they didn't want to do this one as a musical, and the director, Billy Bob, was like, are you nuts?
See, but that's, like, what you expect from these live-action things, is that they're not musical. I think now they're like, oh, this makes, like... $500 million more when it's a musical. And it always was weird that they didn't do that.
Yeah, plus now you're selling soundtracks. And...
Right, yeah, I never understood that logic. Like, oh, we don't want to add the music this time. It's like, what do you think people like?
This is serious.
Yeah, it's like, what? Well, I remember when the Blu-ray for Beauty and the Beast came out, there's a special feature about like the earlier looks at it, and it wasn't a musical too at first, because it was in production before Little Mermaid hit.
Mm-hmm.
And Little Mermaid was like their first big musical in a while. So they're like, oh, we're not going to do a musical. And like, you look at like the story reels for the first version, and it was so boring and bad.
I mean, granted, you're watching storyboards. Who knows what might have been, but like, based on that treatment, boy, it dragged.
Right, yeah.
It was just so much talking.
Yeah, it was just like, oh, God, somebody sing a goddamn song. You also find it funny that every single one of these movies now has to have a moment where the girl says she's not a princess.
Yeah, they're driving that point home.
How many years till the live action Moana? Live action Frozen's happening at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Like 20 years for that.
Yeah. What do they do? Like maybe a live action Pocahontas? Would that work?
I mean, that's the thing. Like, is it. I don't think they're going to go into that barrel of tomatoes now.
They could.
I think from even. I mean. They got some garbage for political correctness in the 90s with Pocahontas.
That's true.
Like, I see
your point.
Maybe they could do it a lot. Which I actually wouldn't mind that, because Pocahontas has incredible music.
Oh, some of the best they've ever done.
It is more like kind of the story beats and whatnot. That's like not the highlights, but yeah, the score is fantastic for that one. If they did a Hunchback version that was kind of closer to the stage play version that they did, which kind of kept some of the more tragic elements and kind of downplayed the goofy sidekicks and whatnot, that would be fantastic. But they'll probably do more, you know. I don't know. Like, what else could... You know, they haven't done a live-action Snow White in a while, though everyone else has is the problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
Same thing with Peter Pan, right? It's like, they can't really...
They're doing Peter Pan, I thought. I think they are.
They're not deterred by, like, everyone else doing
it. No, I think...
I mean, they did Hook.
Well, because it's like... You know, it's like, oh, all these other Peter Pans. Guess what? Daddy's home.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. There was that one that came out like the early 2000s everybody liked that I never saw.
The one that used the Mist 3 theme?
Yes, the one that used...
People liked that? I thought they didn't.
No, people liked that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, people thought that was good.
Oh, okay.
So, interesting. All right, so...
Anything else?
No, yeah, that was good.
I like the credits. They had a nice
credits were pretty sequence. Nice. Yeah, they get... The ending was good. The movie did a good job of kind of presenting itself as a big deal, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Like, this is, you know, this is a thing.
It was confident.
Yes, it was. It was very confident. It was a
very confident movie.
It was very confident in itself. I will give it, yeah, definitely will give it that. All right, so what, playing stuff, what have you been playing?
Zelda. Nothing.
See,
Zelda.
I beat Zelda.
Oh, you're a jerk.
And once I stopped it, I kind of had to, like, I was, like, you know, I wouldn't mind going back and, like, getting all the shrines, but I got to get through Persona right now and... some other things, so I've been playing some other stuff now.
Yeah, my issue is just the last week, I play it every night, but I only get like an hour, hour and a half, and it's like, well, I don't want to go do a dungeon. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to run around. Like, I feel like if I just get like 2.5 hours to sit down, I'll beat it.
Yeah. But do you just have to do the...
The Rito.
Have you been to their town?
No.
I mean, I'll go to their town, yeah. But
and then I need to do, you know, whatever the end is. So let me ask you this, having beat it, no spoilers. Does it maintain all the way through the end?
You want me to answer that?
Sure.
The ending's probably my least favorite part of the game.
Yeah, that's kind of what I figured.
And it sucks to have that be your least favorite part.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked, me and Jeff did a podcast about this for Games Beat This Size, where we kind of talk about this a lot with spoilers, if you want to hear that.
Yeah, I didn't, I skipped that one for now.
Yeah, but just that, I didn't think the final boss was all that good. The ending is, what I was saying, it's a sparse ending, which I was almost expecting to a degree. But, you know, because the game I keep comparing this to is, in terms of, is this my favorite Zelda, is Wind Waker. And the one thing Wind Waker has going for it is
the best ending.
Oh, a fantastic final boss fight, fantastic ending, super memorable. And, you know, last impressions are very important with these kind of things, right? It's like, because it's the feeling you have when you beat the game and you're wondering yourself, well, how did I feel about that and all that stuff. So yeah, I kind of am like bummed that like my least favorite thing to happen in the game was basically the ending, and it's not that it gets awful or anything. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious for you to go through it, but Chris had similar feelings about it as our younger brother.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it. Usually the Zelda games end pretty well. I mean,
Wind Waker, kind of strange. Even Twilight Princess actually had a pretty good final boss fight and ending.
Yeah, even
Skyward Sword had a great
final boss. That was a great one. Link Between Worlds.
Link Between Worlds had a fantastic final boss. So. Yeah, it was almost kind of surprising that they would stumble on that particular finish line
a little bit.
But yeah, there it is. I mean, it doesn't diminish the incredible heights and accomplishments of this game, which we've been raving about for weeks now.
This game is
it's so good. It's fantastic.
And I mean, a week of solid play. I think I'm 30 hours in at this point.
Yeah, really.
It still surprises me.
Oh yeah, there's still just all these
People the way they handled a situation. I'm like, and I'll still be like, I didn't know you could do that.
I saw, like, you know how people, like, you know, they put, like, the fake, like, the real titles of games on box arts. I saw one with the box art for Zelda, and the title was just, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah, I saw that.
I didn't know I could do that.
Like, here's one I read about. I think it was in that documentary thing they released. If you're in a thunderstorm, you know, like, if you're holding a metal weapon, it starts sparking, you're like, oh, shit, I'm equipped, this shit, getting hit by lightning.
Oh.
You just throw your sword at a guy.
I've done that once.
And then he gets zapped.
Yeah, it'll attract lightning.
What?
That's cool. It's crazy.
That's incredible.
I didn't see this yet, but somebody apparently made their own airship somehow?
Yeah, you get a bunch of octo balloon things and stick them to the corners of a raft, and then you use a cork leaf to drive it. Right?
That's
insane. And again, I said this last week, I'll say it again. There are no glitches in this game.
No.
That astounds me.
It's like this and Horizon, I'll say too, where like, two big open-world games that come out, and usually you're like, well, they're open-world game, we're going to have glitches. Like, even with Witcher 3, which I liked a lot, it had a lot of glitches and stuff. But yeah, it was fine. So, and it's interesting, because I always felt like the next open-world kind of RPG thing that comes out after Breath of the Wild is going to have an especially rough time, and it's going to be Mass Effect. And some of those early Mass Effect impressions, Edge Guy.
I know, I'm worried.
Oh,
well, here's what I've heard, though. Which might save you. Apparently, the combat's very good.
Yeah.
Very
good. Apparently, the combat's great. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like the biggest problem are just...
It's just...
Technical and art, and it's so weird.
That's BioWare. That's their thing.
Well, but, like, how do you... Well, they've always had somewhat, like, dull, expressionless faces. But
that line, my face is tired.
My face is tired!
Fucking BioWare wrote that. That sounds like a bad JRPG translation. How did that happen?
I want to know, did they actually look at the face and say it looks bad? Like, we need an in-game explanation?
Right? Like, is this the effects of going to another galaxy?
My face is tired! Whoever says that!
Like, was the actor like, that's a weird line to say, Mr. Writer Man. Are you sure you want me to say that? Like,
no, your face is tired.
What the hell?
It's a fun... but yeah, just like, some of the... I don't know what I think about Mass Effect Andromeda, but Mass Effect Andromeda, the meme, is a big hit with me. It is hilarious. There are some spicy memes out there. They are good. Ooh, a little tingy on my tongue. Oh, gets you right in the back of the throat and stays with you.
That's what she said.
Oh God.
You'll be happy to know. I don't think I told you. I ordered an actual monitor for my computer.
Thank you. Yeah, AJ has. So I went over to AJ's to babysit the kids, and he's like, after they go to bed, you can play Warcraft. I'm like, okay. So I go down to his lair where his computer is. He just has like a 40-inch TV as his monitor. How big was?
It's about 42 inches.
Yeah, as their monitor, and it's like, and it's still like the same distance from you as like you're at a fucking computer desk. I was like, oh, this is stupid. And then you get the most god-awful, uncomfortable chair.
The chair is shit, I admit.
And I'm just sitting there for like 10 minutes, like, nope. I go back upstairs. And plus, you had this weird mod installed for Warcraft so you could use it with a controller. I'm like, well, what is this
That turned shit? On by default. You don't use it, leave it on, but because you were playing a character, it turned on.
I was like, what is this?
Well, it's a 32-inch 1440p. BenQ monitor. It should come in today, actually. It's
supposed to
come
good. You needed it.
Yeah, I'm excited. So, I'll be able to play Mass Effect in glorious 1440p.
So, yeah, you had a garbage monitor, and you should feel bad, but that's all right. Facing it. But, so, yeah. One last thing. I beat Spectre of Torment, the third character for Shovel Knight. Fantastic. Super cool. His whole thing is that... he jumps a lot lower than Shovel Knight. His attacks, like, if you do an attack while you're jumping, you like sweep through enemies, and it's either upwards diagonal or downwards diagonal, depending if you're above or below them.
Oh, so it like locks on a little bit.
Yeah, well, no, a little bit, but it's more about just like how you, because you have to be pretty like in the trajectory to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just more about you travel through them either upward or downward. That's cool. How you do a lot of platforming.
Is it using enemies to kind of leapfrog?
Yeah, so like you know exactly. You kind of leapfrog instead of hop, like Shovel Knight would, or bounce necessarily. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he also it's not really a wall climb. If you jump on a wall, he'll go up a bit and then like fall back down, so you can jump up, go up a bit, then jump.
Like a Yoshi back. Hover almost.
Yeah, but on a wall kind. Yeah, it's good way of putting it. So again, it's just a completely different movement tech, and it's not just like you're playing through the levels. Like they redesigned the levels to work with this. The bosses all have like new mechanics and all stuff.
That's
and
awesome.
It's a completely different story. It's cool. It's like a prequel of sorts, and like because you're expecting like the story is like a little darker and like actually takes itself a bit more seriously and stuff like that. Like there's still goofy moments. It's Shovel Knight.
It's Shovel Knight.
But it was fantastic. It was awesome. It was super good. Those guys just they do such a ridiculous job with that game. Like right? That game is so much better than it has any right to be.
Right? Whoever it's great that it exists. Right. I love it.
And there's still one more character they're making. I think King Knight is mm-hmm. the last one, and I'm just so excited now to see like how it's going to be different again.
Mm-hmm.
It's just so good. Like, that is such an easy purchase on the Switch. Having that on the Switch is so great. Because it just looks so good. Like, especially a game like that. Like those indie games, they look so good on the Switch. And you're just playing it with, like, relatively, anyways, compared to, like, your 3DS big screen in your bed, and it's super comfortable.
They just drop it on the dock, and it's on TV. Right. I really like the Switch.
Yeah, I know.
I really do.
It's to the point where it's, like, when the games are, like, coming out, they're not for it, it's almost like, this would be so much. Especially, like, because I'm playing Persona 5, and it's like, this would be so convenient if this was on the Switch.
Right.
Be so convenient. Oh my god, it would be so nice. And to the point where I wonder if, like, whatever Sony and Microsoft do next, or if they can just do a PlayStation 4 Xbox One that does a similar thing.
Yeah.
Like, at some point, fucking maybe. Rad. Right? So, be back for Nintendo. So rad. But, be interesting. So, alright. Alright, I think we're just about done.
Yeah, here. Wrap it up.
All right, well, thanks for listening to the Exploding Barrel Podcast, everybody. You can find us at ebpodcast.com. And you can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be sure to go to the iTunes Music Store and Google Play. Leave us reviews. We always appreciate that. And, yeah, we'll see you next week right here on the Exploding Barrel Podcast.
Bye-bye.